Hello, Space Junkies, and welcome to episode 138 of What a Piece of Junk, the Star Wars podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. I'm your host, Scott Buttman, and joining me is my original podcast co-host, Mr. Derek Marsh. Derek, how's it going?
Happy St. Patty's Day to our listeners and to you, That's Scott. Right.
Yes, did you make sure to wear some Grogu-themed items today, lest you get the pinch?
I have a Bucky's, and you'll appreciate this, Bucky's St. Patty shirt. So Woot. I wore that out today. We were supposed to go to Lexington, had their parade yesterday, Saturday, which was gorgeous. I mean, it was all the way up to the low 70s yesterday. Would have been a great day.
Yeah.
Even with the cool breeze that was going on. But unfortunately, the hot, cold weather has gotten me with a sinus infection. So we decided not to. So... we did some cleaning around the house. Christina decided to paint the bottom kitchen cabinets black because she wants a new thematic look. So now we have black on white contrast. So you could always say our kitchen now looks like a stormtrooper if you want there. I know you'll appreciate that, Scott.
Yes, the next time I come to your house and decide to cook something, I'll be sure to blacken it so that it's on the dark side.
I was going to say, I would bring a Stormtrooper waffle maker, one or the other.
Or my Stormtrooper-themed Instant Pot.
There you go.
Yeah. But you know who won't be on the dark side, even if I am cooking? He'll just be on the standing by my side and salivating. It's my original Wookiee co-pilot, our very own Dave Filcloni, Mr. Miracle, the man of a thousand nicknames, the gooey chewy Nathan Miracle. Nathan, how's it going?
Well, you know, I'm always thinking with my stomach. So I will definitely eat that blackened chicken or blackened pork.
There you go.
Oh wait, no. As a chewy devotee, you can't eat pork. It's all don't eat me, bro.
It's the tip yip or whatever it is, right?
Yes, tip yip. Yes, tri-tip. I feel like tip yip is just Star Wars tri-tip. It's got to be what that is, right?
No, or maybe it's vegan pork.
It's Star Wars turkey because that's what they. I eat at the holiday special, and it's true.
And they even like hang it over the back of the engines of the Millennium Falcon to cook it. Which cooking meat with engine exhaust is the de facto rebel or poor people way of cooking in Star Wars because they do that at Galaxy's Edge with the modified pod racer engine. That is cooking the Ronto wraps at Galaxy's Edge, right?
Well, that did that in episode one, too, didn't they? When they're going through streets of Tatooine.
In Mos Espa.
Was that a modified pod racer engine? I never got that. I'm going to have to go back and watch Phantom Menace.
Isn't that what they're serving Sebulba? I thought that's what it was.
Well, I know they were serving him food, but I didn't know it was roasting on an engine part.
I thought it was.
Oh, maybe so. Darn, an excuse to go back and watch more Star Wars.
Yeah, what do you know? Well, speaking of watching more Star Wars, we know you guys aren't here to hear us discuss cuisine. That's a whole different podcast. But we're going to talk about Star Wars. And in this week, we're talking about two episodes of Star Wars The Bad Batch once again. Now, in the previous episode of What a Piece of Junk, number 137, we did also talk about two episodes in the same podcast, but that was more our fault because we had been busy and hadn't recorded for a while. This time around, we're doubling up with The Bad Batch Season 3 because of Lucasfilm making the decision to release both of them on the same day, and that was back on Wednesday, March the 13th.
To be fair, it was just a really long episode. That's all.
Yeah, it really was just a really long episode. It's technically part 6 and part 7, but we're merging them all together for our discussion because they're so interconnected. It was basically a two-part story. Back in the olden days of broadcasting cartoons, we'd have called this a mid-season finale, and it would have just been either one big long special or a two-part. It actually would have been something-something part 1 and something-something part 2, but we don't do that stuff anymore, kids. So anyway,
very rarely.
We're going to be talking about episode 6, Infiltration, and episode 7, Extraction. So in these two episodes, we see the Bad Batch come under assault by Imperial forces, namely they're dealing with two of those weird shadow clone assassin thingy maboop guys. The dudes that had the electro pill implanted into their teeth so they can kill themselves should they be captured, as an homage or reference to the cyanide pill that various spies had during World War I and World War II, so that they could kill themselves instead of being captured and interrogated and tortured and whatnot. So, yeah, that sounds like it's probably a good enough reason for me to fire up the dark side effect again, because dang, Star Wars animation, cyanide pills, electrical pills, suicide, assassins. Anyway, so yeah, let's get right into it. So these are for 6 and 7, the questions. So Derek, number one question, what did you like best about these episodes? And you can do two answers, one for each episode, or just overall, whichever you feel.
No, I'll go with overall for this, just because, like I said, it felt like an overall large, long episode, right? I really enjoyed, again, where you have that, the good guys, in a sense, going down to the border of the dark side with them, mm-hmm. you know, contemplating how far they're going to push themselves to get the answers they need. It's something that's very similar to what we've seen the Rebels do later on, that we've seen in various previous stories, right? Specifically around Andor, and what they had to do, right? In Rogue One. With Saw Gerrera, that obviously, you know, he's gone full, you know, not quite mm-hmm. dark, but pretty, you know, pretty willing to do the things necessary to get the job done, even at the cost of his own men, or, you know, that not, you know, saving what, you know, they could do for people around them or even the enemy, right? And we've kind of noticed that a little bit throughout this season that we've even talked about, right, with the Bad Batch not holding back in a lot of senses. When it comes to no longer stunning, right? Whether that is because they know they're not clones, and they're just, you know, obviously knowing it's the Empire now, or are they doing it because they're just, you know, treading that line of, you know, good versus evil, doing the right thing? You know, obviously they're no Batman at this point. So, right. You know, how far are they going to push themselves to get these answers? And obviously we don't know. We know Rex obviously survives, like we've talked about. And, you know, we don't know what's going to happen to the rest of them. And does it eventually bite them back, right? We've obviously seen Crosshairs do some things. And, you know, he's kind of regretted it now that, we get a little bit more of that. But people not trusting him still, right? Obviously, Hunter and Wrecker and Omega, and to some degree, Tech.
Echo,
thank you. Trust him, right? But the others don't. Now Rex says that he does, right? Because Hunter does, but the other clones obviously, you know, are not quite sure. And it's hard to say, because then when you have them in instigating you know, the other shadow clone, right? He says, well, why don't you ask him, right? As he's pointing to Crosshairs, and you know, mm-hmm. that's giving the reason for them to doubt each other. But overall, I did like that about this, where you're kind of again getting that, how much is too far for the heroes?
Yeah, totally. And I agree with you completely that it was a situation where they were bumping right up against that border. And I noticed that Crosshair almost seems reticent to do the stun thing the whole time. Like, he doesn't even care about whether or not he should stun their fellow clones. You know, he's definitely going to blast the Imperial Stormtroopers, whatever the non-clone ones are, but he seemed pretty fine blasting clones as well, as if they were getting in his way. But yeah, it's a great pair of episodes for me. I will do the same thing as you and pick one overall best or favorite moment. And for me, that was a little more lighthearted than what you had to say. So let's, you know, not be quite as dark side here. But for me, it was the fact that they spent a good portion of the episode talking about the food they were eating at their little secret base, right? So I got to keep doing my recipe jokes here. But yeah, the fact that they kept talking about how the food was based on Fireball's recipes, I was so, this is cool. I'm like, I want more about Fireball as a character, because we don't know him as well as we do some of the other clone troopers. And I love the implication being that it was basically like chili or something, because it's kind of like when firemen cook at the firehouse, you know? And Fireball, of course, would have the really spicy chili. And Omega kind of gets to the point where she's not that keen on it, so she gives it to the dog. She gives Batcher some of her stuff. And she's like, here, Batcher, you can have my share. And I'm like, oh, good thing Fireball's not on base right now to watch everybody dog out his particular recipe for this chow. Also, now we can call Batcher a chow hound. Hey.
Ba-dum-bum.
All right.
Well, maybe yes, maybe Fireball will get his own cookbook.
Hey, that would be, I'd buy it. I'd buy it and be like, I'm cooking some Fireball chili.
Just put cayenne on everything.
Trooper Fireball. Exactly. But I do enjoy that eating in the mess hall was kind of the moment that the second Shadow Clone Assassin was getting ready to be able to take out people. And then he noticed that it was Omega. And so he was all like, ooh, wait, I better call this in before I take her out because we've got the standing order to capture her alive. But yeah, just them having that sense of camaraderie and hominess in a base again, and then having it all ripped away, you know, I mean, it was really well written for that part of the episode. And that was probably the part I liked the best. All right, Nathan, what do you got? What do you like best about this episode?
Well, I'm going to try to keep this brief because a lot of what I like about this episode is going to be answered in another question, because we always ask about connections to other parts of the Star Wars universe. And we got a lot of them. We got to see some characters that appeared in the Clone Wars. We got to get some name drops of clones. You mentioned Fireball. We also hear Gregor, which we know he survives. He's one of the three on the walking thing in Rebels, whatever, yeah, whatever that thing was, the ATT, whatever it was, the repurposed.
The sand fishing rig.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. It was neat to get to see a bunch of different characters from all around the Star Wars universe and check in and see what's going on. Even seeing some former Separatists and former Republic characters, you know, getting together on the same side. That was neat to see. But like I said, I'm going to keep that part brief because I will mention a whole bunch of this stuff when we talk about connections to the rest of the Star Wars galaxy.
Yeah, totally. And you're right, getting to see the senators involved talking to each other, that was pretty cool. Like you said, bringing together a member of each disparate side from the Clone Wars. And it was good to see that, not Senator Ochi, but the other guy. Senator Singh was still alive and still being protected by his friends that are the rogue clones and other.
Or is he? Because his voice changed. He's no longer Alexander Siddig. He was Danny Jacobs. I saw him. I thought, oh, this is Alexander Siddig, and I was listening to him. Like this is not Alexander Siddig. So I had to look
this
it up afterwards.
Dr. Bashir.
That's exactly what I thought. Like, I do not hear Dr. Bashir in this voice.
Fascinating. It probably was a budget concern or maybe scheduling. I don't think we're supposed to read too much into that.
Probably not. But you know, it's more fun if we do.
We?
So.
Yes,
it
right.
is Dave after okay. all.
Yes. Yeah, you should know, Mr. Phil Coloni. Anyway.
Okay, yes, it was a scheduling thing. But yeah, it's more fun to pretend like it signifies something.
Conspiracy.
All right, moving on to question two. Derek, what did you like least about these episodes?
So the first one, I got two quick things. Well, one long thing and the other quick thing, though, is that I love how, like, the whole time, like, somebody, you know, is entering the base and they have like no like whatsoever, like, you know, they're like, we need to get out of here, and they're like, let's go, like they're not even worried about like you would think, like, okay, grab the kid and let's go, you know what I'm saying? Like, come on.
Also, yet another intruder has easily infiltrated their base. Come on, Clone Force 99. Yeah, where is the OPSEC?
Security? Nah, yes. we don't do that here.
But my biggest gripe though with this one was Wolf. To me, it was just plot armor. I didn't care for it. There's no reason that when they radioed the Clone Shadow radioed in, that it wouldn't have gone straight to Hemlock. Why would it go to a bunch of clones? I'm sorry. That was stupid. Oh, I'm going to believe these clones are going to do what they're supposed to do, right? It's not the refurbished clone assassin, shadow clones, right? That's one thing. But these other ones, it's like, let's do it. And it's like, okay, you know, and then it's Wolf. And it's like, okay. Like, we just get away now. It's like it was really good up till about that last quarter of the episode. When it was just like, okay, it's going to be clones and they're going to, you know, come to an end and all this stuff. I'm just like, all right, whatever. Other than that, I really enjoyed the episodes because I really liked, you know, that Crosshair's got his moment against the shadow clone. Like, he's still not completely helpless. He won in hand-to-hand combat. He's not just a pure sniper. I thought that chase scene was cool. I really liked that. But just like I said, that to me is just plot armor that I just was like, all right, whatever. Like, if we know that Hemlock would have used anyone to some degree, that he has the whole empire to as disposal, but at the same time, he would have kept it close to the chest. Like, if Omega is there and it's a shadow clone found it, like, the direction should have been like, I'm the only one that knows it, right? You need to get all this out, and I'm only going to send in death troopers and whatever else and my more shadow clones to come get her, right? Because basically they just scared them off. They did a whole Admiral Ozzel that we, you know, we'll talk about later, where then alerted the clones to where they're at coming to get them, and they escape. So, like I said, that to me, I just didn't care for it. I mean, you could say whether it's plot armor or not, but to me it was like, oh, okay, so now Wolf is going to be like, well, we kind of owe it to him. I'm just like, oh, this is stupid. Okay, that's my gripe.
My complaint piggybacks with yours. It was in the way that Wolf reacts to Rex basically telling him, because Wolf is all like, I'm not going to fight against the Empire. Are you fighting against us? And Rex was all like, well, we're fighting against the Empire, but we want you to stop considering yourself part of the Empire. And we're obviously doing the right and honorable thing, which is true. But I feel like there are plenty of other clones and not clone troopers, like stormtroopers, that are standing there that, even though their commander is Wolf and he's all like, don't attack these people, don't try to capture Omega, we've got to talk it out. I just think that the clone commando guy with the glowy helmet and various others
would have just
been like, yeah, they're like, no, you guys are now traitors too. We're gonna blow you away and attack Bad Batch and capture Omega. I much prefer that it has come this way for storyline purposes, but internal logic, it's hard to reconcile that with some of the other parts of this series where we've had a similar situation, and the loyalist forces there for the Empire tell the clones that are trying to be honorable to throw down their weapons and you're now under arrest and that kind of a thing. You know what I mean? Like, even if they don't blast them and blow them away immediately, they at least relieve them of command to take their guns and send them to prison. You know, we literally saw that happen with Hauser. And so, yeah.
And then what's going to happen with Wolf now? Like, oh, I went back and just let him go.
Yeah, and hey, maybe Wolf will have his comeuppance, but it was just a wonky way to end the episode.
Wolf will definitely have his comeuppance because he has to end up with Rex and Gregor. Because those are the three that are in Rebels. Yeah.
But I rather would have him then just thrown down and been like, yeah, let's go do this, you know, instead of...
Yeah, and like him joining Rex happens right now, and we have a fight.
No, it'll happen later this season. I believe we will see it, but...
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. Nathan, what was your least favorite part?
All right. Well, this is something that we've discussed with the Bad Batch before, and it's that my favorite parts of this episode, or this pair of episodes, are the parts where the Bad Batch either isn't in it or aren't really doing anything.
fair. Yes.
Like, I really liked Rex. I love seeing Wolf. I liked seeing Avi Singh and Rio and... You know, all of that's great, and none of it had anything to do with the Bad Batch.
Right, yeah.
Like, right now, Omega is a MacGuffin. The bad guys want her, the good guys have her, and the plot is protect her. That's it. And that's all the Bad Batch really has to do. For a show called Bad Batch, I'm really enjoying everything else more. It's a similar problem as we had with Boba Fett. The best episodes of Boba Fett were the episodes that focused on Mando. And that's not good.
And sorry. Because it's St. Patty's Day, is she an O MacGuffin?
No. No.
All right. No. I think on that note, we'll just move on to question number 3. What other connections did you draw to the rest of the Star Wars galaxy? And I'm going to go first because I don't have a whole lot, and I know Nathan has a bunch. And my one is the Leech Vessel. So they're all getting, you know, attacked in the tower there. That's their temporary base. And the Shadow Clone assassin is getting over on them. And so they're like, we're going to have to get out of here. But, you know, our ship's been blown to pieces. But we do have our Leech Vessel down at the bottom of the tower here, and so they get into it and fly off. And even then, the Shadow Clone Assassin almost, you know, gets the better of them by blasting their engines directly. But it was cool to see that thing again. And I love the concept of the Leech Vessel, and I hope that someday we get to see one do stuff in live action, whether that be in the Dave Filoni produced big screen movie or some other Star Wars live action series that has a Leech Vessel moment. Where we basically get to see some boarding actions that happen mid spaceflight instead of with the original boarding action that we saw at the very beginning of Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope, where they capture the Tentavee 4 and then cut open the hull and board in and try to capture Princess Leia and so on and so forth. So I think anything involving the Leech Vessel is cool, and it was fun to see it again. Derek, I'll let you go next because I think Nathan has like a whole
laundry list. No, I mean, mine was, you guys already mentioned it earlier with Senator Chuchi and Singh. I really like that scene right there. Obviously, it was great to see that some of the Empire/the Republic are now realizing, yeah, we probably were the bad guys in that. Separatists just wanted to be separate.
Yes.
From everyone else for independence. And yeah, now they kind of want independence. So it's like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. So I really like that scene. So, you know, it brings a grand across the entire Star Wars universe. Every 20 years, somebody takes over new and we got to have somebody else uproar it. So, because that's all it feels like we ever get in the Skywalker's current timeline. So,
yes. All right. Nathan, unleash the Crack-a-lackin' list.
So we've actually mentioned a lot of these already. So we have Senator Ryo Chuchi, who we saw earlier in Bad Batch. We also saw Senator Avi Singh earlier in Bad Batch. But again, changed voice actors, with apologies to Dr. Bashir, no longer Alexander Siddig. But you know, that reminded me of an episode of Rebels where they find some old battle droids who, you know, start fighting the rebels until the rebels point out to them, hey, the Republic became the Empire and your fight now is against the Empire because they are the successors to the Republic. So we're actually the successors to the Separatists because, you know, we want to overthrow that government. You should join us. Yeah. So which ones are the good guys and which ones are the bad guys switched from a certain point of view. From Palpatine's point of view, everybody's a puppet anyway. We did get a couple of clone call-outs. You mentioned Fireball. We also had Gregor. As I mentioned, we know survives because he ends up in Rebels with Rex and Wolf. And of course, we have Wolf with his cybernetic eye. Found this out recently. It's not actually just a milky injured eye. It is cybernetic. And he lost it when Asajj Ventress cut it out.
Oh.
Yeah. This happened in a comic book. The reason that particular story arc was never in the Clone Wars show is because it's a very complicated, convoluted story that involves a whole bunch of different people on a whole bunch of different planets at the same time. And that's really hard to translate into a nice 4-piece arc in the cartoon. So it never got adapted.
If we had the Mortis trilogy happening on the animated show.
Mortis trilogy is only one planet, though.
Still, though, it is complicated.
Well, it is complicated, yes, but
you only need to show him versus Asajj to really see that he gets a cybernetic eye. You could just ignore everything else. You can just take that little point and plop it into an episode.
All right. Yes, but if you want the whole Battle of Korm, which is where this happened, that involved a whole lot of stuff and a whole lot of different Jedi and different clones and all of that. But long story short, Asajj Ventress cut out his eye, but he survived and got a new eye, and that's why he's got a new one. And he is, of course, was underneath Plo Koon, who is Dave Filoni's favorite Jedi. Can you blame him? It's Plo Koon. I mean, he'd be my favorite Jedi too. Wait,
yes, we know.
Yeah, so it was neat to see him. And of course, he's one of the clones who never actually betrayed his Jedi, because Plo Koon was in a starfighter when Order 66 happened. So he was shot down by clone pilots, and Wolf is not a clone pilot. So he never betrayed his own Jedi. Only by circumstance. His Jedi wasn't there. He probably would have, because he still had the chip. Or perhaps he wouldn't have, because the chip may have been damaged when he lost his eye.
Ooh, now see, if they bring in Ventress and have the whole thing where he got his eye cut out and that made it where he didn't have the chip, that'd be awesome. That'd be cool. Rule of unintended consequences.
And that might also help to explain why he would be like, you know what, we're not going to take these guys in when others would have. And then once he gave his orders to his good soldiers follow orders.
Indeed. Although I still, that glowy face clone commando guy has done so many things that I'm just like, come on. I feel like that guy needs a name. Is that Commander Scorch? No, Commander Scorch is somebody else, isn't he?
I am not sure. That I'll have to look up. But that's all the connections I'm going to go with for right now.
Okay, cool. A really good list. I dug it.
That'd be cool if it was that gold-plated Imperial Stormtrooper in Thrawn. Like, he survived the whole time.
Captain Enod?
Is that what they...
Enoch. Thank you very much.
Because they borrowed the biblical name.
Oh, that's right.
That's right, yeah.
So maybe Scorch, I guess that's Enoch?
It's possible, Derek.
Is there a connection there? I don't know. I'm just trying to think.
Clones can be, you know, their lifespan can be extended as well as accelerated, so that would be interesting. Okay, anyway, speaking of clones that have been changed and modified, let's talk about question number 4. What's the deal with the Shadow Clone Assassins? Rex. So yeah, these secret agent type clones, they tried to make Crosshair become one of them. We saw one earlier in the series that Rex had to fight. I believe that was the tail end of season 2, right? Where we first saw the Shadow Clone Assassin with the and Rex
on Coruscant. Gonna
capture him. On Coruscant, thank you. Rex was going to capture him so that they could find out, who are you working for? And instead of answering any questions, he pulled a German spy move and bit down on his tooth that had the electro pill in it that killed him as an homage to the whole cyanide pill thing.
A reference back to The Mandalorian when we saw an Imperial officer do that.
Yes. So perhaps...
Sorry, I had to throw in one more connection.
Perhaps the Imperial Remnant was more serious about all the whole, you cannot get captured, and now not just the clone assassins have the electro pill, but everybody has to have the electro pill so that you don't give away to the Republic where we are and what we're up to.
Yep.
So my answer to the question, what is the deal with the Shadow Clone Assassins? It's all that stuff, plus a lot of good old-fashioned brainwashing and psychological conditioning to turn those clones from honorable soldiers into dedicated, unquestionably loyal killing machines, and continues to be a broader metaphor throughout Star Wars as a reference to the Vietnam War, because you had so many veterans coming home from Vietnam that just couldn't turn off the killing, man. There was a whole movie, two movies, multiple movies, made all about this, including Apocalypse Now, Platoon, and of course, The Deer Hunter. And some might say Rambo as well. The first Rambo, definitely more of a Vietnam allegory and direct response to Vietnam from the veteran's point of view. And I think, you know, every time we see Crosshair look with he sort of has that look of disgust on his face about these clones, clone assassins. I think it's mostly because he realizes just how close he came to crossing that line himself. And so he's not necessarily disgusted with that assassin, but rather disgusted with himself, because he views it as his own weakness that made him almost agree with all that stuff until he more dealt with his feelings that had gotten him thrown in jail in the first place on Mount Tantus, about how the Empire treats the clones as expendable. And he doesn't want that to happen, because deep down he still has Jango Fett's innate sense of honor. And so that's what's keeping him from crossing the line to become one of these mindless assassin clones. And as Wrecker often reminds us, sometimes being defective makes us more effective. And so Crosshair couldn't be conditioned the way those other clone troopers could, because he is part of Clone Force 99. But I think that we'll definitely be dealing with these shadow clone assassins for a while in the rest of the season. Derek, what are your thoughts about clone assassins? What's the deal with that?
So, most likely it's not, but it would be cool to counter what you're saying, Scott, and Crosshairs is a clone assassin. And the reason his hand is shaking is because he's trying not to kill them at that time.
Okay, yeah, he's a deep sleeper agent. He's going to be like Talia Winter on Babylon 5 or any number of other traitorous people that didn't realize.
Double agent at this point, right? So, I think that would be really cool if that was the case. And that's how Hunter dies, is that Crosshairs legitimately shoots him in the back, right? When he's not expecting it. And then that's when Wrecker and Omega have to kill Crosshairs, and that's how two of them die. So that would be an ultimate betrayal, but it would be a typical Hemlock where they were able to plant another chip into Crosshairs, or another subcommand that is, you know, not, you know, Order 66, but Order 99 or something, right? Which is kill your clone peer.
Yeah. If they have an Order 99, that'll be absolutely poetic in this series. So I could see that happening. Also, like Agent Seska on Star Trek Voyager. Sorry, I had to bring in a Star Trek one. That could be totally cool.
I'm going to go with like Red Arrow in Young Justice, complete with being a clone. Spoilers.
Yeah, totally a clone. Yeah. Derek, you got any more to say about clone assassins, or you're all good? Okay, Nathan,
I'm good.
Your thoughts. What's the deal with that?
Well, I think Derek is right when he says that it's not likely that Crosshair is actually a deep sleeper agent. I think they did try to make him one. I mean, they pretty much said that in the show, but that he resisted. And I think this might be the Dark Troopers Mark One, and this might be when they start to figure out that part of the weakness of the Dark Troopers, or the early versions of the Dark Troopers, is the people inside. Because we tried to make this one person a Dark Trooper, and it just didn't take. So they start to learn that, you know, yeah, it's great when it works, but it doesn't always work.
Right. And so they move toward the whole, let's make them robots instead.
Yeah, let's get them to be cybernetic next, and then full robot after that. But man, they really reminded me of the Separatist assassin droids, with the narrowing of the helmet down towards the jawline. It looked a lot like those assassin droids,
and the black circle part of their viewport. Yeah, totally. Cool. All right. Okay. And now, finally, question number five. Derek, I believe this was your question, so I'll let you take it away.
So At first, I thought the assassin that they were going to send was going to be Asajj, but it ended up not being her, right? It ended up being another actual clone. And then, you know, they obviously see at the end where the clone survives, right? But when do we think Asajj is actually going to come in, right? Is that going to be next year? And then do we think she's a clone?
Good question. I think that she is going to show up in the finale. I actually think that she'll be only in the finale. And I don't think that she's a clone, although that would help answer the idea that was put out there by the authors of Dark Disciple, because they said on X, Twitter, whatever we call it nowadays, when Asajj was seen in the trailer for season 3 of The Bad Batch, they came on Twitter the next day and said, fans of Dark Disciple, this story is not going to mess up your understanding of the novel. Everything that happens is in keeping with the storyline from Dark Disciple. So if it's a clone of Asajj, then...
And that's why they need
that. Yeah, exactly. If it's a clone of Asajj, then that keeps the storyline intact, because the real Asajj died after that story with Quinlan Vos, right? Also, we as the viewers have not been able to see what's behind all the laser gates in the vault on Mount Tantiss. And if it's a clone of Asajj Ventress, and that's what they're trying to do with all the M-Count thing to get a Force-sensitive clone going... that would be a cool reveal right before the episode, the penultimate episode this season. They open the laser gates, and this time we get to see it's Asajj Ventress in a tank. Dun, dun, dun. And then she comes out of the tank and goes to assassinate whomever in the finale. So, yeah, now I'm kind of thinking it might be a clone of Asajj, and so that's how we see her. So I'm going with it. Yes, clone Asajj Ventress. That's the reason the M-Counts are important, because it's a continuation of the experiment for Project Necromancer to find out if they can make clone Force-sensitive bodies for Palpatine to inhabit later. And then also, that's how we're going to get to see Asajj do stuff, even though she should be surely they must be dead by now. All right. Nathan, what do you got?
So, I like that idea. I'm running with it, because... the idea that what we see in this show doesn't mess up Dark Disciple basically only leaves two options. Either these are flashbacks, or these are, this is a clone. That's basically the only two possibilities. Dark Disciple most definitely happens before the end of the war. There's no way it can happen any later than the start of Revenge of the Sith, and honestly can't even happen at that point because we know where Count Dooku is. So we're definitely past that point. You know what, I'm going to go with it's not a clone. I'm going to go with it is a flashback, and it is a flashback to the Battle of Korm, where she takes out Wolf's eye, and we might actually get the on-screen story of how he lost that eye. Maybe he's retelling that story to Rex or to the Bad Batch. One of them could be like, hey, what's up with your eye? And how come your chip is all damaged and messed up? And if he can explain this is what happened. And that would allow Dave Filoni to take a story that already exists and adapt it into the cartoon format, which he very much likes to do. That's already been done with Ahsoka's story. He likes to do that. So that's what I'm going with. Not a clone. It's a flashback.
Okay. Although makes sense.
Although I do like the clone idea.
They talked himself into it, then talked himself out of it, and now talking himself back into it.
Every time I think I'm out, they keep pulling me back in.
The advantage of the clone idea is it gives us a satisfying ending to this arc of, we needed the M-Count for this particular test, but that test would really be a test for, well, can we do this with Palpatine? So there's a larger storyline, but we can still have a tight end to this storyline with here's Ventress. And the other big thing about it is you can have the tie-in with the heir to the Empire when you have a big fight with this cloned character at Mount Tantus.
It's right. Not just that. Do you think we get Grogu in this at some point? The story of why the Empire is wanting Grogu because of his M count. Because they're after Omega for her M count. But do you think they would do something with Grogu?
Not in this show. Eventually, yes, but I think it will be set closer to the original trilogy.
I think we're going to see, and I think it will be in a live action moment, because we're going to see Kelleran Beck fighting to save Grogu, and he will fall, and whoever the Imperials sent to capture Grogu or Bounty Hunter, or whatever, however, to put him in the pram.
Clone Asajj.
Maybe.
In live action.
Yeah, but the Asajj. No, but the...
with three J's instead of two.
Three J's. Anyway, so that's the person that would have put Grogu in the pod originally.
What happens if the Asajj Ventress we know was the clone, though? This is the real Asajj.
Oh, don't give me some Peter Parker Clone Saga nonsense.
Not yet, no.
The real Asajj was trapped under the Statue of Liberty ever since Gwen Stacy died, and the Jackal has been releasing clones of her. Wait, no, I'm getting my properties all mixed up. It is all Marvel, though, and therefore it is all Disney.
Yeah. But no.
Please, God, let's not do that. Clone Saga. Please, no Clone Saga. Anyway.
I mean, I was just trying to think, because they spell Asajj with two J's, so maybe she was the clone the whole time.
Oh, it was right there in front of us. Draws various threads of red yarn to connect all the
lightsaber yarn.
Lightsaber yarn. Yes. All right. Well, anyway, if you want more baseless speculation and conspiracy theories for your pop culture, you should check out the other shows that we have here on the Fandom Podcast Network. And we're going to take a quick break so that our friend Kevin can tell you all about them.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Here are the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. Culture Clash, where we discuss the latest in entertainment and pop culture. Blood of Kings, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theater, we celebrate our favorite movies. And Time Warp, our fandom flashback show discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie, TV, and pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Hair Metal Podcast, we cover the rock metal music of the 80s and early 90s. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, discussing the time-traveling Doctor Who universe. Lethal Mullet, an action film podcast, covering the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, with a deep dive into the final frontier. The Fandom Show, our Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube show discussing the hottest topics in fandom. The True Believers MCU podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic and Television Universe. Union Federation, our Star Trek and the Orville show. And we're proud to welcome the BQN Network to the Fandom Podcast Network. Please visit our friends on the BQN Network, a Star Trek Universe podcast that also includes your favorite topics, movies, history, superheroes, and more. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on all major podcast platforms. Fandom Podcast Network audio master feed is on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
All right, thanks, Kevin. All right, guys, so we're back, and we had a little bit of Star Wars news this week that we can discuss here at the end of our episode. First up, Patty Jenkins has announced that she is once again director and apparently writing the script for Star Wars Rogue Squadron. Now, Derek will often like to remind us with all these movie announcements for Star Wars these days, I will believe it when I am in the theater seat, popcorn in hand, getting ready to watch the movie. Right, Derek?
Been 5 years, still no movie.
Yes,
it's gonna be at least another two more.
I don't know if I'll believe it even then.
It's like this is all just some fever dream that I wanted to watch Star Wars in movie. But
it's gonna be all Star Wars Rebel Moon.
Yes, I'm in. Anyway, so yeah, we got an article here from our friends at Variety. So pretty solid Hollywood news source. Zach Scharf has written a headline: Patty Jenkins says, "I am now back doing the Star Wars movie Rogue Squadron. After Wonder Woman 3 fell apart, I now owe Lucasfilm a draft." So she's using the language here of that she is committed to doing stuff for Lucasfilm, and it was only put on hiatus because of her commitment to Warner Brothers and the DCEU for Wonder Woman Part 3. But James Gunn and friends that have taken over the DCEU do not want Patty Jenkins' Wonder Woman 3 to happen. I'm with you, Derek. Thumbs down, but that's a whole different podcast. They're basically saying to Patty Jenkins, thanks, but no thanks. And so Patty is now out there making the rounds in the media. And she says, guys, here's a quote. "When I left Star Wars to do Wonder Woman 3, and I started working on that, we talked about, well, maybe I'll come back to Star Wars after Wonder Woman 3. So we started a deal for that to happen," Jenkins said. "When Wonder Woman 3 then went away, Lucasfilm and I were like, oh, we've got to finish this deal. We finished the deal right as the strike was beginning, so I now owe a draft of Star Wars, so we will see what happens there. Who knows? They have a hard job in front of them of what's the first movie that they're going to do," Jenkins added, talking about Lucasfilm. "They have other directors who have been working, but I am now back on doing Rogue Squadron. We'll see what happens. We need to get it to where we're both super happy with it." So yeah, guys, this is not confirmation that Rogue Squadron is happening, but it is confirmation that somebody is writing a script for it. Derek, what are your overall thoughts about this? Patty Jenkins coming back, no Wonder Woman Part 3. How does the quote-unquote success or lack thereof of Wonder Woman 1984 factor into this when you're looking at Patty Jenkins as Rogue Squadron screenwriter and director?
So as a director, I think she's great still. I don't think there's anything wrong with her directing skills. Her writing skills have been hit and miss then, right? I mean, obviously she can write something really good, and then she can write something that's really convoluted and done poorly, right? And that feels like Star Wars recently, outside of the series. But when they announced it, I mean, I was excited for it. Let's be honest, we actually got a trailer, right? But it was a trailer about her being the director for it, right? So we actually did get a trailer, technically. It's been the most Star Wars movie trailer we've ever seen, like I said, the past 5 years. And I do appreciate, like, that, you know, she does have an affinity for real life dogfighting because of her father and the history with that.
Yep.
But I also look at what we've had history-wise with Rogue Squadron, and I don't know, again, where that's going to put it, right? Is it going to be an actual Rogue Squadron with Wedge, or is this going to be a whole thing on its own, right? Because I feel like, and that's probably why they haven't said anything within the whole Mandalorian universe, they never have done anything with Rogue Squadron, right? They don't even call it out at all. But I really, 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 really actually would prefer that it wasn't a movie and that it was a series, because I feel like it would be really well done to give characters the option to be able to be, you know, given breath, given the ability to actually learn about these characters. Because I feel like if you're going to spend all this time introducing people, especially with Rogue Squadron, you're talking at least 8 or 9 kind of main characters to some degree that are going to be pilots and maybe a couple of astronomic droids. And then you're going to have other characters. You're going to have villains, and it's just going to be too much if you're trying to cram it into a 2.5-hour movie.
Yeah, I think you're probably right there, Derek. It's going to be too much to try to cram into a 2.5-hour movie. So I think what they're probably going to do, or I guess maybe not probably, what I expect for them to do is that it will be set between Empire and Return of the Jedi. And so it's going to be the classic Rogue Squadron storyline era of them going out and doing stuff as part of the Rebellion in order to, like, almost be like Rebellion commandos, right? And so Wedge will be like the main guy, the head honcho. And this will be an excuse for them to recast Wedge with a younger actor. Obviously, Dennis Lawson is not going to be an action hero at his age. No offense, Dennis.
With deepfake.
Right, right. But so what that means is...
Deepfake is good for a few minutes. It's not good for a whole movie.
Correct.
Right. What that means is we're going to, rather than try and introduce a bunch of new characters, we're going to recast a bunch of already well-known characters. Alden Ehrenreich is coming back as Han Solo in this movie. Donald Glover might be back as Lando in this movie. I'm not sure about that as a cameo.
Well, Han would be frozen.
Yeah, but I think this is going to be a situation where we'll have a flashback or at least him in a hologram. Heck, it could even be that Rogue Squadron's mission in this movie is to go get Han from Jabba's palace, but they're not able to pull it off, and that's why Luke and them have to do it in Return of the Jedi. Or even they're chasing Boba Fett while he's got Han in the Slave One cargo hold. Any number of things like that, right? And it could, and this will also give them a chance to recast Princess Leia and Luke Skywalker. So we'll have somebody who isn't Mark or Carrie playing those people in live action in this movie. Because then you can do all kinds of cool action stuff, but you don't have to introduce a bunch of new characters because we already know who these characters are. Now, is this going to make for a good movie? Are people going to accept this? Probably not.
But why not do the Shadows of the Empire then?
Well, we could do Shadows of the Empire like this. That could be what they're aiming for. I mean, Wedge and them were involved, and yeah. We could, instead of Alden as Han Solo, we could finally have a live-action Dash Rendar, and it'll be some new actor we've not heard of. And then you get your scoundrel pilot thing.
What's his name from Jack Reacher?
Oh, yeah, that could be a good Dash Rendar. I can't think of that actor's name.
Yeah, I can't think of
him. He's got the...
Big, bulky dude.
Yeah, I'm no help.
Yeah, he's got the he's got the range. I think he could do a Dash Rendar. And then you've already got a CGI model of a droid close to
Lebo.
Dash Rendar's. Yeah, Lebo with L337 from the Solo movie. But yeah, I think that's what's going to happen. We're going to be between 5 and 6, and we'll have recasting of characters we already know, so we don't have to spend a lot of time with background and build up and intro and so on and characterizations.
You put way too much faith into Disney.
Well, probably. I mean, and so of course what will happen is none of that's going to be the case. It'll be Poe Dameron leading the Rogue Squadron in the New Republic, you know.
I might be okay with a Poe Dameron Rogue Squadron. I might be okay with that.
Yeah, and I'll be all wrong. I won't even have the year. I won't have the era correct. You know, right?
But I would still prefer the series.
Yeah, right. I would prefer a series as well. Nathan, what do you think?
I'm going to buck the trend here. I'm going to say it's not going to be a series. It is going to be a movie, and it's going to be set after the fall of the Empire. But instead of trying to focus on 8 or 9 different characters, we're not going to use the characters from the books by and large. There's going to be 1 or 2 characters from the books, or we might cameo a few of those characters. Maybe we get a Corran Horn. He was in Rogue Squadron. And that would tie into the whole Jedi Academy and whatnot. But we'll follow a storyline, and there will be a main character who is part of Rogue Squadron rather than trying to focus on the entirety of Rogue Squadron. And then we end up with 1 storyline with that person being the key person. The rest of Rogue Squadron will show up. They'll be supporting characters, but you won't really need to know who they are or what their deal is, other than these are ace pilots for the Republic.
So it's like James Bond? You get the one agent, and then you get all the agents at the end?
Or it could be more like Top Gun. Because Patty was kind of leaning into the Top Gun atmosphere. And so therefore we'll have our main character that Nathan's talking about is going to be our Maverick. And they're trying to prove whether they're worthy enough to join Rogue Squadron. And so the rest of the Rogue Squadron folks are like cameoing it. Wedge is there as like the final arbiter of whether or not you pass the tests and all.
Nope. I think we will not get Wedge. I think we'll not get any characters that we would need to recast.
No Wes?
Oh.
Wesley? No.
Wow.
Interesting. None of those. Because Disney has been very reluctant to do any recasting since Solo. That's so true. I think they will continue to not do any recasting. We might get Wedge if he's a cameo, like if he's the guy who determines whether you get in at the end or not, then they might do the deep fake thing and have him show up just for the graduation ceremony or what have you. But then you can get Dennis Lawson. But I don't think they're going to have any characters that they have to recast from here on out.
Interesting.
And again, that's why Disney.
You may be right.
Yeah. I don't like that. I would rather them have recast for these characters, but I don't think they will. I think the only character that they might recast is the one from Ahsoka, who passed away. And that Baylan. Just because Baylan, and that just because there was an active storyline with that character. And it was a sudden and unexpected thing. I don't think they're going to recast any of the legacy characters, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I could agree with your comment about legacy characters, but Wedge is not somebody that you're talking about here. I mean, you're talking the big five.
I'm the one who's talking. I know who I'm talking about. I'm talking about anybody who appears in the original trilogy, with the exception of Darth Vader. And him only because they can get Hayden Christensen to do it.
Mm, yeah. Although your point about we're going to replace Baylan Skoll with somebody other than Ray Stevens is because his death was unexpected and a storyline was ongoing. I mean, all of those things are true about Carrie Fisher dying as Princess Leia. You know, I mean, there was a storyline ongoing, and in the way that they didn't recast, and it was probably a terrible idea. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Well, they didn't have deep fake as well as they did back then either.
True.
Yeah.
All right. Well, prepare yourselves for the worst segue. Speaking of Star Wars actors passing away, we unfortunately have to take a moment to pay respects to another one of the original trilogy actors who has passed away. A much smaller part than Princess Leia, obviously, but Michael Culver has died at the age of 85. He was famous for playing Captain Nita on The Empire Strikes Back, and he was the guy that Vader choked out, and we just see him collapsing to the floor, and Vader says, "Apology accepted, Captain Nita." And we're continuing the theme at that moment in the film of Vader choking out inept or
everyone,
at least, if not inept, but Imperial officers who don't do what Vader says they have to do, no matter how difficult that task may be.
Or don't do it well enough.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, he gives everyone multiple tries. He does. He does.
He does.
He did not give Captain Nita multiple tries.
Well, what we see on screen, we don't know how many times he's lost the Millennium Falcon at this point.
I believe he doesn't even give Admiral Azzo multiple tries, because it's not been that long since he killed General Otage.
No, Admiral Mati.
No, General Otage. In the comics, Otage gets off the Death Star before it goes explodey, and he becomes kind of the head military guy. And he's running the Executor and Death Squadron and doing the whole, we don't need a Death Star because we can do this with Star Destroyers and whatnot. And eventually, shortly before Empire Strikes Back, Vader gets fed up with him and kills him.
Oh, I knew in the comics he survived. I didn't know Vader was the one that eventually killed him. I thought he got killed by the rebels. Wow. Nope. Maybe that was what I was supposed to think.
It was. It was all a misinformation campaign. Vader kills him.
But again, how many times did he fail him?
Yes.
He may have a three-strike policy.
Going back to Michael Culver's career outside of Star Wars, if I may... He did a lot of acting over the course of 50 years. His other notable roles include parts in Sherlock Holmes, A Passage to India, and Secret Army, which were bigger British hits. And his agency notes, and of course, one of the most memorable death scenes in the Star Wars franchise. So obviously, Captain Nita's place in the pantheon of Star Wars is going to be well remembered because he helps illustrate an important point about the way Vader was interacting with his men at that time. but also just, you know, what blind obedience to a fascist regime can lead to, which I believe the real Michael Culver would probably be very happy that he is well known about teaching that lesson, because after the early 2000s, he stopped acting to mostly concentrate on a political activism career, unusually becoming more outspoken as he got older. This is according to an article at Deadline. He was a major supporter of anti-Iraq war campaigner Brian Hall, who camped outside the United Kingdom's Houses of Parliament for a decade and acted in political theater productions in London. He began first acting in 1961 and did a lot of television at the beginning, with roles in The Avengers, the one with Emma Peel, not the one with Iron Man, and The Adventures of Black Beauty, The Sweeney, and The Darling Buds of May. So there you have it, guys. Rest in peace to Brian Culver. Sorry, Michael Culver, friend of Brian Hall. All right, well, now it's time for Derek's favorite part of the show, and that is, what Star Wars shirts are we wearing this week? I decided to dig out more of my old Star Wars shirts now that I'm unpacking at the domicile, and I found my Bad Batch shirt that, as you can see here, is a reference to the album from Queen, speaking of British entertainment, that has the original four members of the Bad Batch on the Queen album cover riff, with their faces floating in black and white relief. So we have Wrecker, Crosshair, Hunter, and of course, pour one out for Tech. I always like this shirt because it's a Star Wars shirt, but it's a deep cut Star Wars shirt. So if you see it, you know that it's making fun of Queen, or at least homage to Queen, but then you're like, who are those dudes? And I get to give you some Bad Batch knowledge. Nathan, what do you got?
All right, well, I've got two Star Wars things on today. It is, of course, St. Patrick's Day, so I had to make sure I was wearing green, and for that, I'm wearing my green Grogu hat. He's peeking over the bill of the hat right there. But I could not wear this shirt today. Since we had Clone Commander Wolf, I'm wearing my Wolfpack Dave Filoni t-shirt. Just the perfect shirt for the reintroduction of Clone Commander Wolf into the storyline. I couldn't wear anything else other than this.
Absolutely. I enjoyed the fact
that... Is that all you've been wearing for like a week?
No. I put it back on today. But I made sure not to get it dirty.
I liked that Clone Commander Wolf mentioned to Rex, "Rex, I thought you were dead." And then he talks about going down on a cruiser, and Rex was like, "Oh, I did go down on the cruiser, but we lost a lot of good men that day." Reference to, of course, the finale of Star Wars: The Clone Wars.
An excellent connection to another piece of the Star Wars galaxy.
That's right. All right, and Derek, what do you got on?
Nothing for wear. I mean, I've got a Star Wars shirt on, right? But it's my Not Today AT-AT AT-AT. But a couple of rare foils. I don't think I've showed you guys yet. I'm wanting to get these graded, but I don't want to go into a whole HGA thing right now. So I may not get them graded because what's happening.
Because screw you guys. That's why.
Because they don't want to do subgrades anymore. But anyways, the first one, I was able to get a trade of for the foil.
Oh, Luke my Skywalker. Gosh. The big Jedi one. Luke Skywalker Knight. Jedi Knight foil. My goodness. Derek, can I ask how much that set you back? Or I guess you traded for it. Or I guess whenever you can, tell us how much you think that card might be worth.
This one's worth about $350 or so, depending on the market. Wow. But no, I traded for it. Actually, I traded a gentleman for both of these cards. And it was actually Star Trek, because obviously for Star Trek, you don't need this cards anymore, right? Because you can just print everything. Right. But if for Star Wars, if I wanted to do stuff, you obviously have to physically have the card. So that's why I've been a bit more collecting those. But obviously I wanted these so I could put them, like I said, graded, like I did with my other ones with the custom slabs, and then put them on a wall mount I want to get for all the stuff. So I got that one. And then I traded a full set of limited edition premiere Star Trek for this.
Nice.
And I got this. Ultra rare foil.
Oh, Darth ultra Maul.
Darth Maul Young Apprentice.
Yeah.
Foiled. Yes. Oh my gosh.
Ironically, and this one can range from 650 to 1,000.
Yeah, I was going to say, ironically, not what you would think of as a as more of a big character in Star Wars besides Luke, but yet rarity wise, much harder to find than Luke Skywalker Jedi Knight.
And I'll be honest, I think it's probably the coolest picture though.
It is a really cool picture.
Yeah. So I haven't been able to nab one. I mean, I have one of the non-foils, but it was pretty beat up because I got it actually at a pretty good price. Because even the non-foil one will go for like $400 to $500. I got it for like 200, but it was played. But hey, I got it in my deck because it's played, because it's fun. So I don't have to worry about grading it.
Yeah, totally. Cool. All right. Well, if you guys want some of your own cool merch for What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, please check out our store over at tpublic.com, where you can find iPad covers, coffee mugs like Derek has there, and all kinds of other What a Piece of Junk cool items, and of course, items for the other podcasts here on the Fandom Podcast Network. And speaking of the FPN, Nathan, let folks know where they can find us out there on the internet.
You can find us in all sorts of places on the internet, anywhere pods are cast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Play, and of course on YouTube. You can also find us on Facebook, What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast. You can email us, whatapieceofjunkpod@gmail.com. On Twitter/X/whatever it is nowadays, we're at What Wars, and on Instagram, you can follow the entire Fandom Podcast Network at Fandom Podcast Network. If you do enjoy our show, or even if you don't, we would love for you to give us a review. Derek, can you tell us more about those reviews?
So for our Space Junkie listeners out there, if you guys love us, then we need as many 5-star reviews as possible, because we need to make sure that we're paying off these Shadow Clone Assassins. Because if not, then they're going to be coming after us. And I don't know about you guys. I don't think I have plot armor enough to worry about, you know, Rex coming to save me, or, you know, Wolf coming to make sure that we're okay. So I'd really appreciate it. Again, you know, leave us any type of feedback that you guys want. Again, we joke around about the 5-star reviews. You can leave us 1-star if you want, if we're that bad. But leave us feedback so we know what to get better on.
Right.
Again, we're doing this for fun. But if you think there's something that we could do that covers, you know, something that, you know, be better in the Star Wars universe, or if you just don't want us to talk about Star Wars at all and just want us to talk about something else, put that in the review. We don't care. Just leave us a review.
Fireball chili recipes.
There you go.
Yes. Yeah. If you have those, please leave those.
Please leave those. But regardless, the 5-star reviews will help us when new listeners want to catch us and figure out, you know, when they're doing the search criteria for Star Wars podcasts or anything in the YouTube algorithm, anything like that, because you can obviously like us and subscribe to us on the YouTube. So we like any of that as well. But again, where you download us and stream us, please make sure you're leaving reviews so that way others can find us. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. And as always, we want to thank you for listening. We make this show for fun and hope that you guys have a lot of fun when you join us to listen to us ramble on about the crazy life in a galaxy far, far away. But until next time, please always remember to respect each other and always respect each other's fandom. All right, Nathan, punch it.